From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio. Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining. And as we like to say, if we can understand it, so can you. I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
And I'm John Wells. All of us at some point in our lives considered options about what path we want to take. And a lot of those decisions can be very divergent. Our guest, John Urschel, can say that many times over. In fact, he's written a book about it, co-written with his partner, Louisa Thomas, called Mind and Matter, A Life in Math and Football. And all we really have to say is that John's two paths were, one, to be an NFL offensive lineman for the Baltimore Ravens, or two, to pursue a PhD in mathematics at MIT. Well, guess which one he chose. Let's welcome him to Cool Science Radio and find out. John Urschel, great to have you with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. John, going back a bit, when did you first know that mathematics was special to you?
Well, I didn't realize it at the time, but ever since, you know, I was very, very little, sort of doing puzzles, problem solving, sort of, you know, trying to understand why certain things were the way they were. This is something that was always important to me.
Yeah, fascinating. And taking it forward, I mean, in reading your book and preparing for our conversation this morning, you were talking about some concepts in math that I really had trouble getting my arms around, but I did want to ask you one thing, and that was, as you look at probability theory and implications for different life decisions, do you actually take the theoretics of probability theory and apply that to some of your decision matrices as you make decisions in life?
Not exactly, but I think it's important to take sort of a strong base of quantitative reasoning and use this sort of throughout your life in every decision you make. And that's more what I take from mathematics in terms of my decision making, rather than sort of like high-level probability theory.
Yeah. John, I have to ask you, well, I saw this great interview with you and some of your teammates and also your mother, and you've got to take me to the practice that you and your mom had when you were young. You were about just coming out of kindergarten, and your mother realized, oh, I've got this kid who's pretty bright, and he really likes this math stuff. And so she did this exercise with you at the grocery store, and it's kind of a crack up. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I mean, this is, most kids, they get their allowance, you know, from mowing the lawn or doing the dishes. And the way my mother gave me allowance, at least initially, was, you know, when we were at the grocery store, you know, the cashier would ring everything up, and my mom would give them some amount of money. And if I could tell the cashier how much money they are supposed to give my mom back before they could calculate it, then I would get to keep the change.
Oh, but you really hoped for just that perfect calculation so you would get the maximum amount. And then she decided she was losing too much money on that because you got it right all the time. So then she changed up the game.
Yeah, so then the new game became, like, I would have to say what the total of the whole purchase was before the cashier did. So, you know, you would have to sort of sum everything up, get the subtotal, and then apply tax. And so because I was in New York State, I got very good at multiplying things by eight.
By eight. That's great. So from there, shall we say, began your love of math. It's followed you. You followed it throughout your life to the extent that you carried it all the way, you know, through and, well, before your love of football even began. And what was the attraction about football when you had this thing that you were already so passionate about?
Well, my father played college football at the University of Alberta. And, you know, when I was little, I always wanted to be like him. And so that's what got me playing football in the first place.
Yeah. And I understand that when you were in middle school, you were too big for football, Pop Warner. And then by the time you got to middle school, they didn't have a helmet big enough to fit you.
Yeah, it was quite a funny situation.
So was it high school that you began to play the sport?
Yeah. And, you know, at the time, I mean, I you know, I didn't have any experience playing football, but I was, you know, I was quite good at hitting people. And so, yeah, my natural ability in football really showed itself pretty early on.
Well, you speak passionately about what it feels like to solve some of these complex mathematical challenges, problems, those sorts of things. What was it in football that really drew you, that really gave you that juice?
Yeah, I just, I really did just enjoy hitting people. Like, it was a really enjoyable endeavor, especially when I was younger. I mean, okay, in my later years in the NFL, this wasn't necessarily, you know, what I got out of it. But, you know, when I was young, this is something I, you know, you're young, you have a lot of aggression. This is something I really enjoyed.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think self-exploration doesn't typically lead us down these very these paths of things that seem just diametrically opposed in terms of, you know, you love football because you loved just hitting people. You loved the aggression of the sport and the physicality of the sport. And then you love math because it's just so awesome, basically, is kind of how you talk about math. But can you take us a little bit more down that road?
Down just sort of the parallel of the two, or in what?
Well, why you find these two just completely opposite things so attractive, and how you pursued them both to a degree that many of us can only dream of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to say, you know, what do math and football have in common? I mean, you know, the sort of ties are tenuous at best, but I'll say that they, you know, they have me in common. I mean, I loved both of these things, and I was passionate about them, and I wanted to do both of them at a high level. And I would say that one thing I've noticed, having been around a lot of people who are really, really good at one thing, is that often being very, very good at one thing makes you much more likely to be really good at something else. Because even if the two things seem almost completely unrelated, a lot of the same characteristics become very useful. Sort of being passionate about what you're doing, being hardworking, sort of having a dedication to achieving your goal, and also sort of being resilient in the face of adversity and setbacks.
Yeah, that's a great point. So you did, though, make this conscious decision at some point to go towards, well, let me ask you that. You were drafted to the NFL, the Baltimore Ravens, and you went in that down that path, and you're no longer there. You left football to pursue this PhD in mathematics at MIT. Wow, that's incredible. What was involved in that decision? Because you've been doing them both side by side for a long time.
Yeah, I was doing my PhD, you know, in mathematics at MIT while playing pro football, and I found that every single time I left MIT, it got harder and harder, and I was just I was really looking forward to focusing on my math career. I mean, football is a young man's game, but so is mathematics in many ways, and I was looking forward to math and also looking forward to raising my daughter and doing both of these things for a very, very long time.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with John Urschel, who's written a book, Mind and Matter, A Life in Math and in Football. You know, when I think about, like, if I was applying for the PhD program in MIT, I would think that there'd be a comprehensive application and you'd have to have some good grades and some recommendations and things like that. But it was certainly more than that. It was a grilling by a number of professors. Can you talk about the environment that you had to go through to be accepted within the PhD program at MIT?
Being sort of accepted literally, this is a very sort of straightforward thing. You know, I apply and I think I was a strong candidate. I had good grades from Penn State. I had completed what I consider to be, you know, quite strong research. And, you know, I was very excited to start at MIT. In terms of being accepted as a mathematician, I have to say, one thing I love about the mathematics community is, you know, they just look at your work and, you know, they don't really care about, you know, these other things. And I think that I think there's something very nice about that.
But wasn't there something that you had to do real time in front of a panel, excuse me, of professors where they would ask you a theorem and you had to essentially prove it for them real time, and then they would keep peppering you with theorems and you had to know all of them, and if you didn't hit all of them, then you would not be accepted at the program. Wasn't there something like that?
Oh, so this isn't like being accepted into the program. So sort of in most sort of PhDs, at least in mathematics, there's something called qualifying exams, which you take some courses, you do some coursework, and after like your first or second year in the program, it's sort of like an exam to make sure that, you know, that you're sort of testing you, seeing like, you know, do you have what it takes to actually get a PhD from here? And so once you pass that exam, you know, the next barrier is just writing and finishing your thesis. But if you don't pass that sort of exam, you can't get a PhD. And so, it's very stressful, and it's something sort of every sort of math PhD student goes through, but it's also a great process because it allows you to truly learn your subject and really become a master of the material.
At Penn State, you had a professor that took a real interest in your development and acted as a mentor. How important was that relationship to you to bringing you to where you are today?
I think it was absolutely crucial. I mean, if it wasn't for, you know, a professor by the name of Vadim Koloshin, I'm almost certain I wouldn't be a mathematician. I mean, he saw me in a class he was teaching, and he saw potential in me, and he reached out to me, and he offered me to start doing research with him, and he gave me books to read and problems to solve, and he really, he motivated me.
Yeah. John, you know, there's so many people that talk about math in a way that I'm sure makes you cringe, because you want people to love math the way that you love math. And yet something happens to many young people in about 8th, 9th, 10th grade where they just leave math and they think they're bad at it and they never go back. What would you say to those people? Because to hear you talk about math makes me want to go back and start back at college algebra.
Well, first of all, good. I'm glad that I make you want to do that. I mean, don't fight it, you know, don't fight it. Feel free to go all in on that. But I have to say that when I hear about people who, you know, all of a sudden math, they get a feeling like math isn't for them at some point, it's usually due to a number of things. One, perhaps, you know, I hear it often like, you know, a student gets sick and maybe they miss a week or 2 weeks of class.
Yeah.
And in their other classes, they manage to catch up just fine. But in math, you miss something, you're sort of always behind the eight ball. Or perhaps they had a teacher who just really wasn't very good at explaining math. Or they got to a point where they were trying to learn something and it just became, you know, very difficult for them. And what I would say is you have to really embrace sort of the challenge and sort of the toughness of it, because math isn't really about, it's not so much about the result. It's not like, you know, you sort of learn the material and then you do the exam and you're done. It's about the process of learning. And for me, sort of that process is always a challenge, but it's a rewarding challenge in the same way that the challenge of like solving a crossword puzzle or solving a Sudoku puzzle is. Like, you wouldn't like have a crossword puzzle and then just try to go look up the answer somewhere and then just fill in all the, you know, the letters.
Right.
The enjoyable part is actually doing the puzzle, not like having the completed one.
Yeah. Because I know that you also have studied Russian, I'm interested in knowing the common threads between math and language learning, because I've heard they're both similar systems.
Yeah, I have to say I am not qualified to talk about this because I'm not an expert on language. I mean, I know a little bit of Russian.
Okay.
I don't know as much Russian as I could have, because so MIT, they used to have this requirement that you had to pass a foreign language exam. And so I was studying Russian to try to pass this exam. But then last year, they changed their requirements, and there's no foreign language exam anymore.
Oh, so. Really? Interesting that you chose Russian instead of, you know, something a little easier, like Spanish.
Well, they only allowed, like, it's sort of classic mathematical languages. So it was like Russian, Chinese, German, and French. I mean, if they had Spanish, I mean, I took, you know, I think I got a 4 in AP Spanish, and listen, I was proud of that. Like, I would have taken the Spanish route if they offered it.
There's a quintessential question in philosophy: is the universe perfect, predetermined, stable, random, or chaotic? Is it stable or random? And I was fascinated in reading as you were speaking, I believe it was about chaos theory and dynamical systems, that you were asking the same question. Is the universe stable or is it random and chaotic? I think I got that right. Are there other connections of philosophy and mathematics that continue to play out?
Yes. So there was a time in which sort of, you know, chaos was a very popular area of mathematics. I mean, it is still popular today. And this sort of chaos theory came as a surprise to many people because, you know, a lot of this universe was thought to sort of be like a well-ordered universe. And then people began to realize that, well, no, there is something sort of chaotic about it. And random is not the right word, but
okay.
Chaotic in the sense that small changes in initial conditions can lead to completely different outcomes.
But most big systems, I believe, have elements of probability in them. So wouldn't random play a role? The word random?
I mean, if we're looking at, let's say, something like celestial mechanics, at a high level, like we're looking at the movement of planets.
Right.
There are sort of physical laws that govern this. It's not that, like, sort of how a planet moves is like random in some sense. It's that it's unstable. There are sort of exact laws and equations that tell you how it's going to move, but these things are very sensitive to initial condition. And that's what leads to sort of this chaotic behavior. It's not, I mean, okay, there's sort of, you know, I guess there's some intrinsic randomness from like a quantum sort of point of view, but I mean, we're looking at a macroscopic scale here. Like it's not randomness. It's sort of sensitivity to initial condition. That's the thing that's really going on here.
We're talking to John Urschel, who is a former offensive lineman for the Baltimore Ravens, currently a PhD candidate in applied mathematics at MIT, about the intersection of math and football and also the divergence of those two. And so I want to ask you, John, about staying on the same thread of probability and statistics, how draft picks for the NFL are evaluated, because this must be something that you love, because it is pretty mathematical how it's come up with. And do you make your own predictions about it and then see if you're right and see if the actual draft pick is something you wouldn't have recommended?
Well, I did get asked to sort of make some predictions and some models for this 1 year for Sports Illustrated. And I have to say that after that experience, I've come to realize that, you know, it's just not a very easy math problem. It's very, very difficult. A lot of the important variables are hard to measure. And there's an extremely high amount of noise to the point that it makes the endeavor sort of very much almost a little pointless to a degree, because there's so much noise, you're not going to be able to make very, very good predictions. I mean, it's tough to do. I mean, people are doing things to try to help sort of draft decision making, but it's very much just a tool to assist. It's not something that can really make powerful predictions on its own, in my opinion.
Ah, interesting. Lots of nuance and along with that noise.
Yeah.
I have to ask you this before we let you go. The NFL has come under fire. Lots of films and documentaries about concussion and CTE. And I know that you suffered a concussion, a traumatic brain injury, a couple, maybe four years ago or so. And you use your brain a lot. And not to say that most football players don't, but for you, it's a little more important that that brain is intact. Did this lead to your decision to leave the NFL at all?
It's definitely something you think about. I mean, the main things that led to sort of my retirement were wanting to focus on mathematics, sort of being excited about raising my daughter, and sort of doing both of these things for a very, very long time. I mean, these were the main contributing factors. Like, I have to say, I'm very happy to be focusing on mathematics at MIT right now.
I wanted to ask you, during the Real Sports interview, you put a hypothetical on the chalkboard. If you're down 14 points, you get a touchdown. Should you go for two, go for one? And you had some mathematical expressions of both possibilities, which were really complex, or complex to me anyway, from looking at it as a layperson. Do you think that Belichick and other organizations in the NFL actually go through that math, have someone come in and do algorithms for them to figure that out? Or do you think Belichick can figure something out like that himself?
So I do know that a lot of teams have, you know, specific sports analytics people who do figure things like that out for them. But I mean, come on now, Belichick can figure that out for himself quite easily. I do have to admit, while Real Sports might have sort of tried to make it seem like quite sort of like an amazing calculation, this is basic high school math. Like this is like algebra one. I mean, Bill Belichick can certainly do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes. And I will say that sort of mathematicians and statisticians are doing far, far more complex things in their analysis of football, and teams are using this. Like, it is a rich field, although it's not a field that I'm, you know, directly interested in right now, because I'm interested in so many other different areas of math, but it is something very, very interesting that's going on.
Well, we only have about 30 seconds, but I'll ask you quickly, are you interested in big data as an example, being able to mine large data sets and be able to find unique nuggets of gold in there?
Yes, this is one of my research areas. Yeah, I do analysis of big data, among other things.
John Urschel, NFL football player, also a mathematician. He's written Mind and Matter, A Life in Math and Football, written with his partner, Louisa Thomas. We want to thank you so much for joining us this morning on Cool Science Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, thanks. Best of luck to you, John.
Thanks, John.